Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 252 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. On this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 28 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and my mistakes. Today, I'm bringing you the latest installment of my actual play of my latest Dungeons & Dragons campaign, Blood of the Avatars. So this is the same storyline that we've been doing for quite a while now. We've just entered the second phase or arc of the campaign, if you will. So we have a brand shiny new title. So this is the 21st session of the campaign. So if you're new to the show or if you're new to the actual play, you definitely want to go back to the beginning and get caught up. If you head to the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney for this episode, I have all of the previous actual play episodes listed and linked there in the show notes. In addition to that, I also have a few ideal episodes to start with singled out for you as well, depending on if you're interested in some of the behind the scenes material I've released for the campaign, whether you're interested in the preludes that I did with the character. So I did a character building and filling out prelude with each of the players. It's not character creation. We're not going into the actual making the character sheet, but just developing the characters more and fitting them into the story and the setting. So I have those linked for you as well. Or if you just want to jump into the first full episode with the whole party, I have that one linked for you too. So there's a few good places to start, and you can find all those things in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. So in the last session, in session 20, We Are Sam, there were a lot of really big reveals about some things that have been going on behind the scenes in the campaign, and the player characters finally are starting to know some of the big picture stuff of what's going on and how they fit into this greater drama unfolding in the world. So definitely want to get caught up before this episode. You might be a little lost otherwise, and there are tons and tons of spoilers in this episode if you're not caught up. So this week features two of our characters, Quincy and Wall. Quincy is a human cleric, and Wall is an Azamar paladin. And if you'd like to know more about the players and their characters, you can find that information in the show notes as well. I have all the characters listed, their class, race, subclass, background, all that good stuff. Oh, and sometimes I forget to mention this, but if you're curious about the relic magic items that the characters have, check out my latest D&D supplement, Relics of Power, in which I discuss relic magic items, which are basically magic items that grow in power as the player character advances through levels. And I explain my system of creating those and walk you through that process so you can create your own relic magic items. And as part of that supplement, I have the relics that the player characters are using in this campaign. So for instance, Wall's shield, the Aegis of Alondra, and Quincy's bow, the Hunter's Bow of Dianara, are both detailed in Relics of Power. So you can check that out on the store at starwalkerstudios.com. So this week, Quincy and Wall learn a lot of very useful information, and a lot is revealed in this episode about the world of Primordia and the coming of the time of the rifts and the breaking of the world and some of how all that came to be and how our story ties into that. So without further ado, let's move on to our adventure. All right. So I put you guys together because it seemed like you had quite a few things that kind of went together as far as what you guys wanted to do. You both mentioned researching the avatars.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan to me. Yeah. We recently figured out we were one, so you know it's a good thing to sort of do a little bit of detail stuff on. Maybe figure out what's coming down the pipe. How many more are there a bunch of other avatars? Is there like a clubhouse? Did they all horribly die? I had to choose one of those.
So, Alondria has many places of learning within it. More than one library, at least one university, if not more. So probably
as big as Alondria again.
It's not like as big as Waterdeep. It's not unrealistically huge, but it's a good sized city for a fantasy
like
city.
100,000 population or something in that neighborhood, you think? Like
I might actually have that information.
All right, I'm just trying to get a sort of idea of scale.
Yeah. Do I have population? Around like looks like around like 25,000.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Which if I remember right is kind of like a good sized city, discounting cities like Waterdeep and Greyhawk that really, like 25,000 is a more historically accurate size of a city from that kind of era than like Waterdeep, which is like bigger than Chicago or something. I don't know.
pre-urbanization
cities. Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't be too stupidly large.
Yeah. So, it's definitely not like a huge metropolis like Waterdeep or even probably it's not the biggest city in Primordia even, but big enough that they have anything you might want.
Cool. All
right. So, one of maybe one of the better places to go to learn about the avatars would actually be the temple to Alondra, which is Wall's deity. She's the god of knowledge and civilization, and her temple is called the Halls of Knowledge. And in addition to having like temple type stuff, it has a lot of books and library, basically. Tends to focus on religion, history, and knowledge kind of directly tied into like civilization, whatever that is. So probably a lot of stuff Quincy would get into, actually.
Yeah. Like
architecture, public works, water works, you know, technologies, things like that.
Cool. Yeah, I'm down for that.
Good to know where this is.
Well, lead the way.
I'm not wearing armor.
In one of these horribly titled books that Wizards put out, I'm pretty sure they have a research kind of thing.
Any reason why you're not wearing armor?
Yeah, I don't know. Why wouldn't I wear armor?
Well, didn't you're in
we
the
just get you fancy armor.
You're in the I city, did. You know. Probably, yeah. I mean, it's usually safe in the city. You probably
usually
wouldn't normally wear anybody other than a player character wouldn't normally probably walk around the city all day, every day in full armor, especially heavy armor.
It would be really embarrassing if you got mugged.
Yeah, right.
Yes. At the very least, you should wear a t-shirt that says, you know, I'm with the guild. Don't mug me.
They hand those out.
They do. Yeah. On the back of it just has an arrow that says purse filled with gold here.
Yeah, I don't know about their research system here. I don't know. I feel like Wizards, like they go from one extreme to the other. Like, I feel like they heard all the people complaining that there's nothing to spend your money on in D&D. And so now they've gone to the other extreme. Like, I swear everything in, what is this book? Xanathar's Guide is a money sink. Like, the research is basically just a way, like it's all based on money. Like you have to spend money, and then the more money you spend, the more of a bonus you get to the role. And it's like, I can kind of see that a little bit. Like they're saying it's for materials, bribes, gifts, and other expenses. But really, it's hard to
for the library cards.
I know, right? Because they're saying 50 gold pieces just to do it, and then you get a +1 bonus to your roll for each 100 gold beyond that that you spend. And they're also saying it takes a whole week to do it.
Huh. I can understand a whole week, but depending on what you're researching. But the monetary side, I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's probably really setting dependent. Like I could see if you're in a kind of like place where like not anybody can access, like you have to be a noble to even get in the library or something, like maybe you have to bribe to get in, or maybe you're researching something really obscure that there's like one book in the world about that. but for what you guys are looking for, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it will take that long. And yeah, I think anybody in Alondra, especially the Temple of Alondra, the Halls of Knowledge, like anybody can use those. You know, they don't, it's not like a you have to be a noble to be able to look at the books.
Your wingspan must be this wide to enter.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like a goddess of knowledge would not want to like hide that knowledge.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Goddess of knowledge, not goddess of secrets.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of two sides of a similar coin in some ways.
Yeah.
Secret knowledge and all sorts of other things, and forbidden knowledge.
Oh.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense that there would be knowledge that we shouldn't have.
No.
Yeah.
I want to be all-knowing.
I don't think you do want to be all-knowing.
No, you're
maybe
probably
you can ask Galandria
right.
for 5 seconds of all-knowingness and see how well that goes.
Yeah, maybe not a good idea.
the very least, I see a headache in your future.
Well, you are an avatar of the God of Knowledge, so all-knowing might be in your future. Who knows?
Mark that down. Mark your calendars,
people. Lex said I was omniscient.
Yay.
Everybody's best friend on trivia night.
Yeah, really. Right. So, to the Temple of Knowledge. To the Halls of Knowledge.
Yeah, so you guys head to the Halls of Knowledge. It's in the central older part of the city. It's a very impressive building, more like to us, probably more like a museum kind of, you know, very, very large, open, spacious architecture, lots of monuments and statues. And in addition to, you know, numerous depictions of Alondra in her many forms, there are also just a lot of statues and murals and whatnot, just depicting and kind of celebrating civilization itself. So like big inventions like the plow and the printing press and, you know, these kind of, can't remember what you call them, but these inventions that kind of like took society to like the next level and made the civilization what it is today. And so a lot of that is kind of celebrated here as well. And yeah, so you guys speak with one of the clerics who are the librarians, and what are you going to tell them as far as what you're looking for?
This is your temple. I would not want to overstep.
By all means, step.
Well,
I'm thinking we would want to research the avatars of past. Yes?
Yes. That does make sense.
So
we had heard of when we were out saving Dianara's rest.
Right. Yes.
We had heard of such avatars and felt that they might pose either help or hindrance in the future, and we should definitely get the information before making a decision. Because, you know, this we are acting.
This is very true. Ido Alandria is one that we want to research.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And also, what kind of characteristics avatars typically have?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And lifespans.
Yes. This is a good idea also.
Poor librarian. It's okay. The stacks are just over there. You don't need to tell me.
Yes. Let me point you to the card catalog.
Yeah, so the cleric you're talking to is a fairly short human man, very, very receding hairline, and he's dressed in his robes, and he's kind of watching you guys as you're like hitting with all this. And he's like, okay. So you're looking for information on avatars. He says, that is not a common topic that people come here looking for information for. He said,
what is common topics people come looking for information for? You might want that too.
History. A lot of people are interested in history. The history of the rulers of the city. He says, yes, but we do have some materials on those topics. Come with me. And he starts leading you, and kind of where you guys are right now is almost like a receiving area for the library part of the temple, and where you are now is very museum like. But as you start following this guy back through hallways and whatnot, you very soon end up in a place that's much more like libraries that you're used to. Just, you know, piles and piles of bookshelves just everywhere. And he leads you through these mazes of rooms full of books, and finally leads you to what almost looks to be like the door to a closet within one of these rooms. And he pulls out a ring of keys and starts going through keys, and he unlocks it and goes in, and he's carrying like basically like a candelabra that would have like four or five candles on it, but the candles are, magical, like continual flame candles, because fire and books usually doesn't mix real well. So all the lighting you've seen in the library is magical, and he leads you into this very small room, and in the middle of the room is a table, not quite the size of like a modern conference table, but a table that, you know, four or five people could sit at pretty easily, with chairs around it. And then all around, all the walls are just filled with bookshelves. And he tells you that this has a lot of very old texts of religious nature. You know, he says a lot of these books discuss aspects of the gods that aren't even worshipped anymore. Some of them, there's even arguments about some of these aspects or some of these gods that are mentioned. People argue about even which god this is even talking about, or is it even one of the gods we know today, or some other god that used to exist or doesn't exist. So he said, you know, in scholarly circles, a lot of this information in here is very suspect. It can't be verified. We don't, you know, some of it's very fanciful. It seems more like mythology than history. So, you know, a lot of the hardcore scholars don't even mess with this stuff because it's so, you don't really know fact from fiction because it's from so long ago. But he starts kind of going through the shelves, and he pulls out some books for you guys. And tells you that these are books that mention avatars or talk about them. He gives you a little bit of guidance as far as like, oh, in this book, you know, check around these chapters. But, you know, once he leaves, you have a decent sized pile of books on the table to kind of go through with some idea of where to find what you're looking for. And some of them maybe, But it will take a little bit of time to kind of peruse and find what you're looking for.
Before he leaves?
Yeah.
I'm going to lower my cowl, lower my hood, and ask him, have you heard of the avatar named Ido?
He says, yes, I have. Ido is the one avatar that we're fairly confident is a real person who is in the world right now.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know anyone who's seen her, him, it, but there are enough stories and accounts of those who have, or at least those who talk to someone who talked to someone who talked to someone who has, that we think there's a good chance that this entity actually exists. Most tales connect it with the God Peak Mountain to the west, but
all right.
Yeah, nobody
knows.
Do
you have any
sure.
tales or accounts here in the halls written down?
Yes. And he pulls out some scrolls. Actually, he says these are fairly recent. Haven't been transcribed into volumes yet, but yeah, you can read these as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, we have a day ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you guys want, you can make an investigation check just to get an idea of how long it will take for you to find what you're looking for.
So, sure. So Lex.
Yeah.
I have a special proficiency.
I thought you did.
Lore of Alondria.
Yeah.
You gain advantage on intelligence for religion and history to know lore regarding the goddess Alondra and the city of Alondria. Cool. Would that help in this case?
Yeah, I think so, since you're specifically looking for information on one of her avatars.
Okay.
I will let you have that roll then, sir. My plus one? Just okay.
So that'll be an investigation roll. And since you guys are working together on this, but Wall kind of has this kind of divine ability, I think what I'll do is say, Brett, you can make that roll with advantage and also add a plus five.
Whoa, okay.
To reflect both the fact that you kind of have this mystical ability and the fact that Quincy's helping you and he's a scholar and knows his way around indexes and things like that. So
he knows the booking more than I do.
Yeah. He knows the Dewey Decimal System.
thankfully, that was advantage.
Does anybody know the Dewey Decimal System these days?
I never knew it.
I never knew it.
Oh.
It always
bothered. I mean, I still know how to use it, but I used to, I could actually tell you like certain subjects, what numbers they were. I was a nerd.
So five. So
don't sell yourself short. We're playing D&D. You're still a nerd.
Well, specifically, when I was in college, I could have told you what numbers were the anthropology books, because I was always getting those. I knew that part of the library very well. So what'd you get, Brett?
21 total.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so, I think in just, definitely like with a day, you guys can find what there is to find, spending, maybe 4 or 5 hours going through these books. So I guess the question now is, what exactly are you guys looking for as far as information?
Well, apparently we are looking for information on how long they live.
Like, sort of, do things turn out well for avatars of the gods? Do, not so much? So is this like a work your way up and get risen up to the, to the heavens, or generally smited thing?
Let me see. So what sort of questions?
If just tales of what they've done in the past, why they generally get chosen, if anybody's had this sort of screw up that we seem to have? Or are we kind of unique in our lack of amnesia?
Okay, yeah. So first, I guess I'll just start with some general information on what an avatar is. And some of this might be kind of different than other D&D stuff. I don't know. I don't know how much of this is kind of my spin and how much of it is what everybody thinks, but so basically avatars are physical manifestations of the god. It's basically like Alondra or Dianara comes into the world in a physical form. It's pretty rare that they happen. Of course, you know, in ancient times, thousands of years ago, there's countless tales of various avatars and whatnot. And it's often believed that the major cities were founded by avatars. For instance, the city of Alondria itself, it's a common belief, began by an avatar of Alondra that said, you know, build a city on this spot and I'm going to stand here while you do it and look imperiously over you.
We can do that.
So yeah, they're kind of, there's a lot of scholarly debate and probably a lot of the pages you guys are kind of sifting through trying to find what you're looking for is scholarly debate as to like why an avatar, like what purpose do they serve? The gods have angels to send messages to their followers or to fight demons or smite evil or things like that. Also, the angels can appear to followers in dreams, as far as, you know, if the god needs to get a message to a priest or something like that. The gods have their priests and clerics to, you know, create more worshipers and bring people into the faith. And so, you know, it's like, what is the point of an avatar? And kind of the consensus, as much consensus as there is, which there really isn't, I mean, there's a lot of disagreement, but some people think it's just when a god feels, for whatever reason, that they have to more directly get involved in something. Usually the gods are very kind of far off and mysterious, and even their priests don't necessarily know what they want or what they expect from their followers or things like that. And so some people believe that the avatars are for when a god really needs something done a certain way or really needs their people to understand something. And so they, you know, it's the kind of thing of, if you want something done right, do it yourself. And the avatar is kind of the god deciding they're going to do it themselves. They're not common though. And a lot of the tales of them from ancient times are viewed with a lot of skepticism, just because in more recent times in recorded history, there aren't many verifiable records of them. So it does seem that when they do come into the world, they tend to kind of keep a low profile other than among their own followers. They're kind of like walk small, carry a big stick kind of thing. So some theorize that there might have been more avatars that we don't know about, and just nobody knew about them. They're not like adventurers in the guild where they're trying to be rock stars and, you know, be famous and make a big scene everywhere they go. but yeah, there's, you know, people don't really know, and it does seem that some gods are more likely to create an avatar than others. It does seem that the more friendly gods are more likely to form avatars. For instance, like the god of murder isn't really known for sending avatars in the world. So a lot of times the avatars are seen as kind of a benevolent force. When a god's followers are really in trouble and a few angels isn't going to be enough, you know, they might send an avatar kind of thing. As far as how long they live, according to all accounts, they're immortal. And killing an avatar is viewed as not a whole lot easier than killing a god itself. And in fact, there's even debate on whether or not you can even actually kill an avatar, whether it's even possible. But most scholars believe if it is possible, it would take very, you know, very specific means to do so. Like, you know, Achilles' heel and how he could only be killed if he was shot in the heel, like that kind of thing. Like if you can kill this avatar, it will take something very specific, and you kind of have to know to do that. You know, it's not just going to happen by accident. You just happen to do the thing you needed to do. But
well, this is good news. Immortality. Need to get some of that.
As far as how they happen, I mean, it just seems like the gods just create them. Nobody really knows how. It does seem that there's either a limit to how many avatars a specific god can have at one time, or for some other reason, the gods don't have a lot of them at one time. So there's debate about that, whether there's actually a limit, like, oh, this god can only have 5 avatars and this god can only have 3, or whether it's just a thing that for some reason they just don't want to have too many avatars. One scholar you guys read who's actually kind of funny, has a bit of a kind of a snarky sense of humor, puts forth the idea that an avatar is basically, could be seen as like a limb or like an eye, like one of the god's eyes. And it's like, yeah, you can have 2 eyes and you're okay. And you can maybe even look at 2 different things at the same time and you're okay. But if you had 20 eyes all looking at different things in different parts of the world, you'd have one hell of a headache. So that was kind of his idea. It was like, well, each of these avatars are really in a way like an extension of the god itself, and there's only so many of those they can handle without either going crazy or just losing touch with some of them. But one thing that's interesting is you guys don't find any reference to anything at all like what you guys are experiencing. All of the avatars you hear or read about are all, I mean, it's hard to draw a line between the avatar and the god itself. Like, they're written about as if they are the god. They have mastery of their portfolio, just like one assumes the god would. So, for instance, an avatar of Alandra would know all knowledge, would know anything that's ever been recorded in a book, the avatar would know. Anything that had ever been invented, the avatar would know about. That kind of thing. So it's almost like, you know, the god made flesh kind of thing, which, you know, you guys, at least in your experience so far, that's not the way it is for
nope.
You.
Nope. Have you felt unkillable?
I would say no.
All right. A question that comes to mind here then is, as far as we're aware, and now I'm not sure if this is knowledge that Quincy has or if this is what Craig knows, but that typically somebody is like overtaken to become an avatar, like a normal person, and then they're like avatared and the god takes over.
Yeah, so that was, I think Druinda kind of explained that to you guys. Mm-hmm. So that's how you understood, that's how she, or not Druinda, Alira, Wall's mother, the angel. That's how she explained it to you guys. But from what you're reading here, that's not how avatars in the past were. It sounds like they were just, the god just like created an avatar, and that avatar was a lesser than the god, but in a way was the god. It was like an extension of themselves. So this idea of a part of the god inhabiting a human and kind of taking them over or becoming one with them and creating this new entity is not something you see any mention of. So it's either you guys are something new and unique, or it's just kind of high level knowledge of avatars that no one before has had. You're not sure, but you definitely don't see any mention of, like, you know, so-and-so before they were an avatar. Like, there's no mention of someone like, you know, lowly village carpenter becomes an avatar of the god of civilization. You know, there's like nothing like that.
Okay.
Also, there's no mention of avatar children. it seems avatars are formed as they are. You know, usually they're a human in their prime, though not always so. Some of the guys, like for instance, Alandra has been known to have more kind of elderly appearing avatars. Some think just to convey like the wisdom of age, and like it'd be hard for an avatar to do that if, you know, it looks like a 16-year-old girl. So they feel like, there's a little more gravitas if you look like a 60-year-old woman instead, you know. What's his name? I'm trying to think. Ganj. Ganj has been known for creating children avatars who, you know, might look like an 8-year-old or something, but, you know, has the mental capacity of a god and seems to enjoy the waves caused by looking like a child, but definitely not acting like one.
I always picture him as Shaggy.
Yeah.
All right. That's some good information.
As far as things avatars have done, you know, there are all kinds of miracles ascribed to them. So, you know, like biblical stuff, like parting seas, raising people from the dead, you know, like high level miracles, like things beyond what you could do with even like a 9th level spell, like
wish plus.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Marked.
Yeah.
So Quincy, the more we read about these, the more I wonder if we're not totally avatars. At least for now. So don't stand in front of things thinking you're not going to die.
No, I usually stand behind things. You're usually a thing. But I kind of, at the very least, this is unprecedented territory for what's happening here. I think you're right. I think we need further research, potentially in the field, if you understand.
I do, yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of ideas put forth in the literature as far as powers and abilities that avatars have, and it seems to vary greatly, not just between the different deities, but even between avatars of a specific deity. So you could have two avatars of Dayanara who have very, very different abilities. But one thing that all of the accounts seem to agree on is that an avatar has a special relationship with the portfolio of that god and would have special abilities related to that. So, for instance, if you're an avatar of the god of the hunt, you would have some kind of special supernatural abilities related to the wilderness, hunting, tracking, foraging, relating with animals and plants and things like that. So that's the one thing that everybody kind of agrees on. Again, it's not clear if that's because people have seen this and they're writing about what they've seen, or just because it makes sense to them and everybody kind of agrees that it makes sense.
Does seem logical. Yes.
And then finally, the last thing you guys find, and this kind of echoes something that Dorinda or that Alira told you, is, and this is one of the more recent sources, talking about this one scholar believes that each avatar represents a specific aspect of a given god. So, you know, a lot of the gods, or really all the gods, have numerous aspects or numerous kind of versions of that god that different people believe in, or will be reflected in different circumstances. So, like, for instance, Alandra is the goddess of knowledge and also civilization, history, writing, cities. So, you know, you might have one avatar of Alandra who represents knowledge, and another avatar that represents, you know, writing. And they might be very similar in some ways, but they might be very different in others. Dayanara might even be a better example, because, you know, you have some followers of Dianara who are all about hunting and, you know, killing game to feed their family and things like that. And then you have others, like, for instance, the Firbolg, that don't even hunt that much and only hunt when they have to and are more kind of vegetarians. So, you know, an avatar from that point of view could be very different from one of a more hunter type. You know, one avatar might be very bloodthirsty and kill at the drop of a hat, where the other one would not even kill to save its own life, even though they're of the same god.
These gods, they are complicated.
They are. Mm-hmm. Alundria, her domains are arcana, knowledge, life, and protection. Is that still true?
Yes.
Okay. Protection, of course.
And Dianara's are life, hunt, and nature. Now that makes I have sense. My player's guide. It has the up-to-date information.
This is all somewhat useful, but, well, I don't have to tell you not to trust an un-peer-reviewed article. None of this has been reviewed.
Well, since you rolled so well, Brett, I'll give you one more tidbit that you guys find buried in a book somewhere, just like in a footnote or something.
Look at this. It's a full bibliography.
and that is one scholar theorizes that avatars have some kind of impact on the weave of magic around them, and that this impact is so substantial that a god or another avatar can actually sense them from quite some distance. Can sense their presence, their existence, and especially can sense any time they use any powers that are tied to their portfolio. And you remember Alira, and I don't remember how much of this was in Brett's vignette and how much of it was when you all talked to her, but she cautioned you about some entity that was kind of hunting you guys.
Mm-hmm. And I will tell Quincy what I remember of the dream.
Which is nothing.
Oh shit, it got quiet.
Watch my vignette, bitch.
No, well, yeah.
That's second.
Basically, it sounds like there is somebody is out there looking for us. They know we are there, but they are not right now threatened by us, or we are not big enough for them to consider a problem. But my mother did warn us that the more powerful we become, the more of a beacon we become for this person who's looking for us.
Right. And your mother, great and helpful and all, but couldn't have been more specific on the thing?
No. She didn't tell me either.
Well, they don't know. Yeah.
Yes.
She told you that whatever it is, even Alundra can't perceive it, which is why they think it's either one of the other gods or it's an agent working for one of the other gods. Because this thing's got a lot of juice behind it if the goddess of knowledge can't figure out who it is.
Yeah. But even Alundra doesn't know.
Yeah. So we, well, of course we must be careful, but at some point we're just going to have to move forward.
I think the best tactic of this sort of thing is to find what is coming after us before they have an opportunity to do so.
Actually, I was counseled against that. I was told that is probably a bad idea.
It's better to know something than not.
Yes, but once we find this thing that is looking for us, this thing that is looking for us will have found us. Right now, I feel, if I remember correctly, I believe this person, this entity, does not completely know where we are or what we're capable of.
Okay.
Yeah, your mother had told you that. I'm trying to remember exactly how she said it. basically like you have this like light inside of you, and right now it's a fairly dim light under under a bushel, to use the biblical metaphor. But as you shine this light more, which is to say as you develop your powers and use them more, it will be easier and easier for this thing to find you. And their best guess as to who this thing is working for is either the god Desmar or the god Vorkoth, and Alira's money is on Vorkoth. He is the god of murder, assassination, violence, and revenge. And he has never played well with the other gods. He's always kind of
god.
Yeah, he's always kind of got his own agenda. He's always kind of working against the other gods a lot of times. The other god, Desmar, is the god of what is it? Bad luck, misfortune, and disease.
Any as a descriptor of an avatar of murder and death comes to mind, do you think that we might know somebody that might fulfill that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we do. And I
really should have killed him when we had the chance.
Do you remember what those madcaps said? When we came across the madcaps, they were drawn to him.
Do not remember that at all.
Yeah, they called him the Maker.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Oh, son of a bitch. We didn't have... Miguel's not an avatar of this murder god, is he?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely what I'm thinking.
Well, I was actually not that Miguel might be an avatar, but I was going to suggest, I'm glad you thought of it on your own, that this agent could be another avatar of one of the gods that isn't playing well with the other gods.
Right.
And one of the reasons that and I don't think I told you this before, but I think Alira would have told you, one of the reasons they suspect these two gods is these two gods were not involved in the effort to fix the damage to the Axis. They did not send avatars down when the rest of the gods did. In fact, they weren't even there. They refused to even come to the meeting that the gods had about this. So...
Is that because they said that they weren't available on the doodle, or was it more of a...
They had a prior commitment.
Well,
Vorkoth probably murdered whoever was sent to invite him to the meeting. I mean, let's face it. And
yeah, messenger to Vorkoth sounds like a crap job.
Yeah, right? That's how you get rid of people you don't want. Hey, take this message to the god of murder.
No, it's okay. You don't have to wait for Rizzi.
Just sort of a flyby. All right. Well, that does actually bring up a second thing that I was wanting to look here. What is the axis of the world? Details about that. I know it's a bit of a tangent, but
that was something I thought we'd save until everybody's together.
Sure, sounds good.
Because I think that's something everybody's going to be interested in to some degree, yeah. or at the very least, if other people aren't, at the very least, we might get together with us in Fear. Because okay. I think she's a big researcher. I think she'd want to be
right.
She's going to be ticked off. She missed out on this.
Yeah, but I can tell you right now, there's really no real information about the world axis. All there is legends and stories. No one in living memory has seen it. I mean, people don't even agree on whether it's a real thing. It's kind of like the Garden of Eden. You know, some people believe in it, some people don't, but no one has the foggiest idea where it is or anything.
No handy world axis map.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
You know, I do have a locate object spell.
That's not nearly as useful as a spell as you would think when you start reading the... It's actually kind of useless. Really.
I read it. I haven't. Yeah, I haven't chosen that as a spell.
Isn't it like only like 120 foot range or something?
Yeah.
Like, well, you have to be practically on top of the thing anyway.
Right. And I was thinking it was actually 1,000, but yeah, that... Oh, yeah, it is. It's 1,000 feet.
Oh, but still, I mean...
That's still pretty close.
You kind of know where it is if you're that close to it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's more useful for, like, I lost my keys.
Right.
And now I need to find them.
They're in this house somewhere. I just don't know where.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, now, if I gave you the ability to locate any object within 1,000 feet, you would find uses for it.
True. This is true.
I think it's just that you also have the ability to launch fireballs.
Yeah.
It becomes less useful.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So,
is there anything else you guys want to know about avatars?
I can't think of anything else.
No, that was pretty good.
All right. So the next thing was you guys wanted to know about the guildies.
Yes.
Who broke the world and were excommunicated / banished from the guild.
So for that, we will go back to the guild. Or,
yes, yeah, that would be the place for that.
Can we? Oh, okay. Can we find the little man, the little bald man that helped us
here at the Halls of Knowledge?
Yes,
his name is Simon.
Simon.
He also has little round spectacles.
Yes, of course he does.
Of course he does. And yes, he actually comes and checks on you guys periodically, anticipating that you may not be able to find your way out.
On one of those times, I'll have ordered a cup of tea.
Okay, sure.
I have no idea whether the tea shows up.
It doesn't.
That's fair.
He writes it on his palm with no pen or anything.
Right, one tea.
he just points to the calligraphied sign that says no eating or drinking in the library.
I want to ask him if in here there is any knowledge of past adventurers, guilds, who have been prominent in history. I know that Alondria is somewhat in tune with the Adventurers Guild, if I'm understanding correctly. They're close allies. That's all it says. The guild are close allies
with
the Temple of Alondra.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not necessarily what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to ask him if there's anything documented within the hall about guild members specifically who may have been prominent in history.
Oh, lots. Many members of the guild have been influential and prominent in their day.
And is there an expert here in the hall who might be able to tell us about a particular guild if we only have the crest and the colors?
Oh yeah. You probably have more luck in with the guild historians themselves on that.
Okay. Better good. Shoo, go away. No.
So yeah, so, Simon leads you out, and you can go to the guild. They of course have their own library.
Yes.
And records.
So before we leave, I will I'd like to just take a moment and thank Alondria for helping us find this information. Just give a little prayer out to her.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
I nod happily. I tap my chest. As I tap my chest, point my forehead, and then aim up.
You know, I feel like this is the first time in this campaign someone has role played praying to a god other than their patron.
Yeah,
which is cool.
That's the first.
Kudos, Craig.
It is a polytheistic society.
That's right.
Like. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially that we spent an entire day researching that they show up.
In fact, I'm going to give you inspiration for that, sir.
Nice.
That's how much I like that. You feel blessed. You feel like the lady might have actually heard you and blessed you.
Oh,
that makes me very happy. I clicked the inspiration button, which, by the way, on D&D Beyond turns it into a rising sunset.
Oh, that's cool.
The icon is actually a little rising sunset when you have inspiration. So that works out quite well for what we're doing here.
The fates have smiled on you. All right. So you guys head back to the guild, ask to see the records.
Do we, Quincy, do we want to go straight to the records, or do we want to talk to Dorinda?
We could talk to Dorinda. That would make sense. We could get a bit of lunch. It's been a long day.
True. We can take Dorinda out to lunch.
There we go. This seems like a good... I like two birds, one stone. Yes. I like it.
So yes, we want to try to go to Dorinda first.
Okay.
Haven't we always seen her within the guild?
Oh, good question. I thought we were outside the guild.
I thought we went to the guild.
Yeah, her quarters are within the guild.
Oh, okay. No, three birds, one stone.
There you are.
Very good stone.
But yeah, you find her in her quarters, and she invites you to sit on the plush silky cushions around the giant hookah that she has. And
yes.
Her magical harp is playing softly in the background.
I remember the last time I was in here.
It's always got that nice scent to it.
So, Dorinda, you said you have just recently come to understand that that guild members were the cause of all this.
Yes. Our leader, Akana, withheld this information from me for a while. It still isn't common knowledge within the guild, something that I strongly disagree with.
Well, I think if this became public knowledge, that could definitely do us a bit of disservice.
This is true. No.
I don't think we would want to be run out of town. And I couldn't really blame people for wanting to do that.
No. Can you tell us any more about the guild they were a part of, or what happened to them, where they are now?
She says, I can tell you what is known. And she gets up from her cushion by the hookah and walks over to one side of the room where she has a small desk against the wall, and pulls open a drawer and pulls out a folder and gives it to you guys. She says, this is what information we have on them. It was removed from the records by Akana's order, but I managed to acquire them before they were destroyed. She says they were one of our most promising teams at the time. There were those who had concern about them, especially about the wizard in their group. He was a night elf from one of the surface cities, but many felt that he shared the darker traits of his kind. Many felt he lusted too much for power. Looking back now, it all seems so obvious. But they were good. They were efficient. They always got their contracts done. We never had to send in backup. They always handled themselves well.
What sorts of contracts did they take?
Well, they tended to focus on contracts that had any chance of revealing any kind of ancient magical devices, spells, lore, The wizard, Mortigast was his name.
Thank you.
Constantly sought greater power and knowledge of the arcane arts. There were four in the team. Mortigast was sort of the leader. The colors of the team were black, purple, and red.
Have a name.
That was the one thing I didn't write down.
I kept on calling the team. We can put a pin in it.
Yeah.
Let's say they were called the Spider's Eye.
Yeah.
And it was black,
purple, and red.
Red.
Purple. Yeah.
So there was Mortigast. He was a night elf wizard. There was Sierra Argent, who was
Sierra.
Yeah, like Sierra Mist.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Sierra Argent was a human woman. She was a paladin of Kalis.
Oh,
God of War. There is Mizril the Rogue, who was a human female, and then Column the Column, who was a fighter, a human male fighter.
Column the Column?
Yeah, his name was Column, C-O-L-L-U-M, and he very wittingly took the nickname for himself, the Column, because he was big and round and solid, like a column. And also, it sounded just like his name.
Who would do something like that? That is terrible. That is a terrible pun.
I like it. It's always nice when you can spot a dump stat from 100 feet away.
Intelligence and charisma, because why not?
Exactly.
As a fighter, those are over, useless. Though. Yeah, yeah. You're not gonna push him over.
No.
You're not gonna outdrink him.
No. You can't flank a column.
Good point.
There we are. Maybe I was overly judging. There's layers to this pun.
Yeah. It goes deep.
He's an onion, that column.
Yeah. Oh. Yikes. All right.
Human male fighter. All right. Column the Column, the human male fighter. All right.
And yeah, you know, the last thing was they took a sabbatical, which we now know was to find the world axis. It seems Mortigast thought that he could tap its powers and become a god. And when he tried to do that, obviously something went wrong. And the axis, which had before held all of Primordia together, lost its grip on the lands, and the lands started splitting apart.
I tell her about my dream where I saw the portals opening all over and I felt the gods moving away.
She says that's interesting. She says much of your dream seems to be symbolic, but some of it is quite literal. I think your descriptions of their cloaks are right on. That's what their cloaks look like. Even your description of the world axis itself and the storm around it and the plane that it was on match tales that I've heard.
Yeesh. All right.
Of course, even if that is accurate, unfortunately, it's not of much use now, as I'm sure that landscape is completely changed.
Right.
Could be an ocean now.
You said on a different plane?
Hmm?
Did I hear you correctly? You said on a different plane?
No, I'm not sure what I said that you thought was that.
Okay.
Oh, it was on a plane, like a plane.
Like on the planes.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
I
forgot about that other use of plane in this game.
I got really nervous
to mean something very different. She says, actually, I can tell you a little bit of lore about the world axis itself, at least the story of it. Long ago, there were many gods in Primordia, too many to count, too many to mention or know. Every people in every place had their own gods. Primordia is a vast, vast place. There are many, many peoples across the world, all with different gods. And these gods were constantly in conflicts with one another, especially when gods competed for the same portfolios. So you might have two groups on either side of a mountain, both believing in a god of war, but these were very different gods of war. And they would often compete with one another for followers. The gods that we know today, the gods that we consider the true gods today, then were among the oldest of the gods. We believe they were the original gods, but of course there's no way to know. They became jealous of all these other gods, taking their worshipers, taking their power. The more gods there were, the more the power of the gods was diluted and diffused among all of these gods, the less power each individual god had. So the nine gods came together. It is nine still, isn't it? Nope.
It is not.
Are there secret 18. Gods that we don't? 18?
The 18 gods came together and began discussing what to do about all these gods. You have to understand, new gods were rising up almost every day. Not only gods of different peoples, but gods would come from other worlds, other planes to this place as travelers came from other worlds and other planes. The gods came together and devised a plan to keep the power in their own hands. Accounts differ on whether they created the world axis or whether it already existed and they just put it to their purposes. But the gods took the world axis and made it so that the world axis became the conduit between the gods and the world. It was the means by which their power enters the world. 18 of the gods attuned themselves to the world axis, and in this one action, they cut all the other gods off. Only the 18 gods who were attuned to the world axis could grant spells to their followers, could perform miracles, could manifest on the world, and all other gods were cast out and could not even influence or enter Primordia. It was also the world axis that brought all the lands together into one giant land so that all people could travel and trade as they wished. It's also believed to be tied in with the weave of magic. It holds everything together. By trying to tap into this and disrupting it, this group of people disconnected the gods from the world and their followers, disconnected the lands from one another. They've disrupted magic itself. We're still not sure what the ultimate result of that will be, but we have seen a lot more wild magic areas, a lot more dead magic areas. Of course, you know about the rifts opening the planes all over the place.
My understanding is magic will eventually go away.
Yeah, I think that's
what my mother says.
I think that's probably true.
It will take time, but Quincy, it's not tomorrow, but it, eventually that is going to happen.
Makes sense.
It also makes a little bit of sense. It sounds like maybe the motive for this group to do this was for Mordegast to become a god. The only way he could become a god would be to break the axis.
And gather the power that's coming through it.
Right.
Yes.
Looking at it now, Druenda says, I believe his goal was to become the only god.
Oh.
To supplant the other 18.
Hmm. Huh.
That seems.
Well, you know, somebody who has aspirations like this is usually not one to give up. They may still be at it.
Depending how much power they managed to get before the world broke.
I could definitely alive, yeah.
Yeah. But it's not impossible to think that they could be acting from even beyond death itself.
Oh, great. I can't hit death.
Druenda says, unfortunately, that's where our knowledge ends. Before we could apprehend these four, they disappeared. And we've lost all trace of them.
Do we know that they survived the world axis?
We do. They were seen not long after things started falling apart. But when agents of the guild tried to apprehend them, they eluded them, and they've not been seen since.
So how are the different ways that the guild has been able to track them? What ways would we not look for to try to track down? That sentence fell apart on me.
She says,
it was a good try.
This is something not normally shared until one is higher rank, but the rings that you all were given upon being brought into the guild are one means that you can be tracked. They have either destroyed their rings, got rid of them, or have somehow disabled our tracking spells.
Okay. So cool. It's not unheard of. It's not like something in their body that they can't get rid of now.
Rings are spy rings.
By the way.
Druenda kind of looks out the corner of her eye at Quincy, and she says, now, I can imagine what you might be thinking, but I can assure you that more often than not, this is used to extract members from situations they can't get out of. We only use these for tracking in emergencies. Right. We don't routinely
prefer to be the tracker than the track.
We don't routinely keep tabs on our members, what they're doing.
Maybe if you kept a bit more tab, we wouldn't have such the problem we do, huh?
You're not wrong, and that is a constant problem as adventurers grow in power. They become much more potentially dangerous and also much more difficult to control or keep tabs of, especially when they're wizards or clerics for that matter. Anyone with high levels of magical ability can find ways around almost anything.
Couldn't say she called you out.
Still a little on this ring thing, but you know, we'll move on. Well, I understand its purpose.
Druenda, I trust you. I don't know that I trust the guild after all of this. I don't think any of us do.
She says, well, that's a valid point. I can tell you that the founders of the guild were all good people, for lack of a better term. With good intentions, but that was over 100 years ago. Things change. There are a lot more people than just the founders in the guild now. And like we were just saying, that as people get above a certain level of power, it becomes almost impossible to really know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
And I also get what Akana was trying to do. She wanted to keep this matter internal. She wanted other members of the guild to take care of this and find Mordegas and his companions and bring them back for justice. But it's been too long. They we're obviously not going to find them. And meanwhile, we're telling lies by omission, by not letting the people of Alandria and the queen know everything that we know about what caused this mess.
So at this point, not even the queen knows.
No.
All right.
What would you... All right, what... I understand, honestly, why the guild is keeping this information. Potentially, we could be held accountable for the actions of those few, which would prevent us from ever trying to fix it. Mm.
She says, I believe that ultimately this will be the undoing of the guild. Akana believes that this is a fate that can still be avoided, that if we just do the right things, that we can correct the damage that's been done. But I don't believe that. I think no matter what happens now, eventually the truth will come out. And when it does, it will be the end of this institution. I just hope that when that day comes, the guild can be reborn in a new image, hopefully one that will be able to withstand this kind of thing and avoid this kind of mistake in the future.
But whether or not
the people of Alandria will ever trust an organization to have the kind of power that this one does, I don't know.
I'm beginning to think that they shouldn't.
Well, it may have been hubris of us to create this organization in the first place.
Yes. This is a rough first week orientation.
I didn't expect so much politics.
Yeah. Well, politics I can get behind, but definitely a bit more skeleton in the closet than I kind of hoped for.
Hey, Quincy, make a perception or an insight check, whichever one you're better at.
Feel like it might be perception. That's wisdom. yeah. That would be 19.
Okay. You noticed something in what Dorinda just said. Mm-hmm. She said something along the lines of it might have been hubris for us to create this organization or something like that. Something about the way she said that seemed more personal to you than, like, she was talking almost like she was there.
Aha! So, you know what? Obviously, this is something that she doesn't really want to be spread, but I'm definitely taking down a note. Yes. Also, with no fear to take notes, I have had to take this job myself.
I've been trying.
Yes, I wish to send Fear a cookie.
are you suggesting I just have Danielle sit in on all the vignettes so she can take notes?
Yes, or watch them after.
Yeah, no, Danielle, just quiet. It's fine. You can just take notes. We're not going to hire her as a secretary. I think that's rude. All right, but Ruinda equals founder? Question marks. Well, Ruinda, this is all good information. Excellent information, in fact. I thank you for your honesty.
Yes, well, it may be a case of too little, too late, but I must do what I can.
Yes, we all must do what we can.
She says, you have among you still the sending stone I gave you. Please don't hesitate to use it if you need my help in the future.
Well, I think I have it now.
Oh, have we given it to you due to somebody else's inability to speak in 20 words or less?
No, I think it was just because I was standing with her at the time she gave it.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Wasn't a judgment. Fair enough. No,
it was. It was, she gave it back when I was outside the ship talking to Illyria and Drinda.
Yes, Drinda, we will We will not hesitate to contact you, and we will, of course, keep you updated as things progress.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And if any information comes your way that you think would be useful to us, please reach out.
I will.
Actually, Thurinda, I have a question for you.
Yes.
I look over at Quincy for a second. I say, have you heard anything else about the murder of the founders?
I have not. Thankfully, we haven't heard of any of the others turning up dead recently. Maybe it's over, whatever it was.
Hmm. Okay.
I think, though, that the founders that were killed were those that were fairly public and easy to find. Most of the ones that remain are either in unknown locations or are hiding behind alternate identities or something of that matter.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, that is a smart move to take when one is being hunted.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I hope they all understand to stay safe.
Yes, I do too. I've been in contact with all of them but one. Her, I'm a little concerned about.
But she might be the least, not the least on the list, but she might be. I'm trying to remember how my mother put it. She's so difficult to find that she might be the last if all of them are hunted.
Yes, we've not actually seen her since the chartering of the guild.
What was her name again?
Avriana. Avriana Lightbreeze. She's a wind elf.
Right. Okay.
Missing since signing the charters. How would one sign a charter and then leave and never to be seen again? This seems silly.
She was very...
flighty.
She was very emotional. She suffered some tragedies in her life recently, among them the loss of her husband, I believe. But I don't really know all the details.
That's fair. Fair enough, fair enough. All right. Well, we've all had our tragedies. How we deal with them, I understand. Right. Well, I think we've gotten everything that I can think of. Wall, any other questions for...
No, I cannot think of anything at the moment.
All right.
Hey, you know the criminal that our colleague Fear took back to Dayanara's arrest, yes? Did we tell you that?
I heard of it, yeah.
Do you know where we might go to find more information on him? What he did on like the investigation and what everybody learned about it?
I'm sure any of the officers of the city watch could fill you in or point you to someone who can.
All right. Very well.
Fair enough. Yes, I think there's I was not particularly happy with how that ended, and I'm even less so now.
This worries me even more now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Druinda, and I will not take up any more of your valuable time.
Yes, thank you for the... Did she offer us tea?
I think she offered us hookah.
Yeah. Okay. Tea too, or, you know, whatever.
Smog.
Smog.
Brownies.
Of course.
And if you need anything from us before we go back, just let us know if there are anything we can do to help.
I will do that. Thank you.
I feel like we're doing quite a bit already, to be honest. But, you know, we need to add more onto the to-do list.
We can always do more.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, as far as Miguel, you don't really find out anything. I don't think that I mean, maybe I don't remember if Fear like told you guys everything.
He was a mass murderer or a serial killer.
Yeah, so he was killing, basically killing the homeless refugees in the city. He was finding people that, you know, nobody knew, that didn't have family in town, that theoretically wouldn't be missed. He was not just killing them, but creating very macabre works of art through the killing and the arranging of their remains, and very like ice cream killer kind of stuff. If you ever watch Dexter, like arranging body parts and like,
man,
things like that. Making art from murder, basically. And yeah, they what did they call him? The Flayer. Because he would skin people alive as part of this whole process. So he was creating quite a stir in the city until they finally apprehended him, because, you know, the city is full of people from other places that don't actually have a home. You know, a lot of them sleep. There's fields in the caves beneath the city, and a lot of people sleep down there. At least they're out of the elements. But yeah, it was a real problem and causing a lot of terror among those people, that there's someone kind of picking them off one by one and like torturing them and all this stuff. So it was a pretty big deal when they apprehended him, and they paraded him through the streets, and, you know, people threw vegetables at him. And they had a very public trial, because the queen felt that would help kind of catharsis for everybody to see him publicly tried. And he was sentenced to be executed. And then that's when Fear came in and took his sentence, took responsibility for that, basically. So yeah, he was pretty bad news. Definitely what we would today call a serial killer. And when you talk to the, like the captain of the watch, you know, that's the number one thing he keeps coming back to, is how the guy was completely without remorse, without any really kind of emotion at all. Like, he didn't feel bad about what he did. He didn't even seem to feel bad about getting caught. He basically seemed to think that he was this genius that was just, you know, just other people were too dumb to understand him and what he was trying to do, and definitely seemed irredeemable to everyone in the watch that you talk to. They're like, yeah, that guy was, there's no point in even trying with that guy.
We definitely do not tell anybody that he escaped.
Okay.
We make a point of not saying that, right?
Yeah.
That would be bad.
Yeah, and you probably have more than one person ask you, they want to know like what happened to him, what you guys ended up doing to him, how he, like, they want the gritty details of how this bastard died. Like, they're like, did he suffer? I hope he suffered, you know.
I think we can probably, because do we know if Fear explained what the goal of this was, of taking him? Like, to give him to a witch to be sacrificed?
Yeah, all she right. did.
I think we can probably just go with that story.
Yeah, we don't know what happened to him. That's not a lie.
Yeah.
That's not the
And truth. I will say, you know, Quincy is a woodsman. Quincy, you know, if he is nothing more than what he seemed to be, which was just some guy with no particular skills in woodcraft, survival, hunting, fighting, any of that. I mean, he was a painter and a sculptor. If he was no more than what he seemed to be, you would be willing to bet money he met a pretty grisly end somewhere out in the wilds outside Dianar's Rest. Because, I mean, it's weeks of travel on foot to get to Alandria, which is the closest civilization.
And it's filled with, like, rifts and monsters and demons and dragons. And
yeah. So chances are really good.
Things that hurt really much.
Yeah. Chances are really good he got ripped to pieces by something like Petunia or something. Oh. if he was no more than what he seemed to be.
Right.
But that's the, I guess that's the question now.
That's the, yeah, that's definitely a, I don't know. At the very least, he knew something about how to kill.
Yeah.
I would.
We will have.
I wasn't that concerned when he got, when he escaped. Figured he would just die out in the woods, but I'm more concerned now. I'm more just like that we didn't know what happened.
Right. I don't like not knowing.
That makes sense.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 252 of Game Master's Journey. If you'd like to get a hold of me, shoot me an email at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, or you can call my voicemail 951-GMJ-LEX-1. That's 951-465-5391. You can also join myself and the other listener GMs as part of our community on MeWe and Discord, and you can find links to those in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney. If you'd like to support the show, you can find all the ways to do that on the website as well at starwalkerstudios.com/support. And one of the best ways that you can support this show is to check out my self-published D&D supplements, the latest of which, Relics of Power, has the player characters' relic magic items in it. If you're curious about those and want to see what all those bad ass items can do. All right, so I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Tranceboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.